Chapter 3, Nature's Big School. I had few neighbors, and so was eager to make friends with the wild birds and animals that lived near me. Often, as I stood in the doorway, looking across at Long's Peak, which towered more than 5,000 feet above me, the rabbits, squirrels, and chipmunks hopped by, unafraid. I moved about quietly, never harmed them, and they soon came to know that they were in a safety zone around my home. Enos Mills. A gusty breeze rustled the aspen leaves overhead. Beneath the trees, the teenager patiently watched the beaver pond. He studied the beaver family at work on the dam which formed the pool. Without noticing him, a coyote on the hunt skirted the water's edge, heading downstream. Later, a mule deer doe and fawn tiptoed out of the trees to get a drink. Enos Mills spent hours, sometimes days, making observations about plants and animals in the wild. Tracking bear and bighorn sheep through the first light snows of fall taught him lessons as real as those in the few treasured textbooks he possessed. Even without a teacher's guidance, Mills said, "I was always studying by my campfire in my cabin and in nature's big school." When deep snow caused him to stop building his cabin in mid-October 1885, Enos stashed his tools in Lamb's barn and headed for work at a ranch on the prairie, east of Denver. His goal was to learn to be a cowboy. In exchange for hard work that winter, Mills picked up a little pay, his room and board, and many new skills. Wide open spaces. In late May 1886, 16-year-old Enos camped on the Great Plains of southeastern Wyoming before returning to the mountains. He intended to see what wildlife lived on the prairie and how it lived, he stated in the story, Camping on the Plains. I felt that I was well prepared. I was certain I knew how to camp, and especially that my camp equipment was correct. Enos hauled a heavy backpack across the greening grassland and set up camp near an old buffalo wallow filled with water. Two passing cowboys, seeing all his gear, asked him if he was opening a general merchandise store. "The kid has more kitchenware than the cook at our cow camp," one said, kindly but merrily, as they rode off. Trekking out from camp the next morning, the young naturalist observed prairie dogs barking in alarm as he approached their colony. Then he stumbled on a mother pronghorn with two young ones. Mills crept close to one of the well-camouflaged kids. He notes in the story, "Not until I had reached it with my hand did it quit playing dead and rush off with the other towards the mother." Fascinated, he spent the rest of the day tracking and observing pronghorn. When Enos tried to return to camp, he became lost. The plains, unlike the mountains, hold few large landmarks. Searching for his way until after dark, he finally made a cow chip fire, lay down on the buffalo grass, and slept. In the morning, Mills backtracked the previous day's trail. He eventually spotted the buffalo wallow and his first campsite. Just then, a dust devil came spinning across the prairie. The whirlwind nimbly lifted the lighter pieces of his camp stuff, carrying them away. After the fast-moving windstorm passed, Enos picked up 57 varieties of scattered gear. Heading toward camp with his arms loaded, he came upon a burned-out campfire, his own of the night before. Mills realized then that he had spent a cold, hungry night only 500 feet from the food and shelter of his first night's camp. Encounters with pronghorn, prairie dog, rattlesnake, coyote, kingfisher, and other creatures made the Great Plains trek special for Mills. He reached some conclusions about camping, too. The supreme camping test, he later wrote, is finding the way back to camp. One who makes a mental log of his movements, who knows where he is every minute, will be able to return. The young explorer also made decisions about what was and was not essential equipment. From that time on, I planned to go light. My equipment now consisted of a haversack, pack, one blanket, one waterproof canvas, a large and a small tin cup, tin pan, canteen, hatchet, pocket knife, and field glass, binoculars. This seemed to be enough. I did not carry any kind of gun. He camped with this equipment, or even less, for hundreds of nights during the years to come. Bachelor Father. A pair of mountain bluebirds arrived at the homestead cabin in the spring of 1886. Mills wrote in Bird Memories of the Rockies, "One morning, before the front of the house was finished, they, bluebirds, took possession. I lived in my cabin that summer without completing it, unwilling to disturb the bluebirds and the building of their nest above the ridgepole. The male and female birds raised two broods of young that season. Mills studied them carefully. The parent birds grew used to him. By late summer, they trusted him enough to perch on his shoulder or writing desk. Before birds and human migrated to the plains in October, Enos tied a copper thread around a leg of each parent. If they returned in spring, he would know. The bluebird pair, mates for life, arrived at the completed cabin in late March 1887. They refurbished the nest above the ridgepole and raised more young, 33 in all, during three summers. They might have returned for more summers, but in 1889, a boy camping nearby with his family discovered the tame birds. He shot them one day while Mills was absent. On his return, the young naturalist found five babies calling out for parents and food. It was fortunate for me, and also for these little orphans," Mills wrote about that day, "that I had watched their mother and father feed, train, and raise a number of bluebird families. He fed the young ones worms and insects by the hundreds. Two of the baby birds died soon after their parents were killed. The survivors lived in the cabin. They played often with Enos and each other. He took them for walks. They followed the human closely, imprinted on him as their new parent. The birds eventually taught themselves to fly. One male, small, bright-colored, and very alert, stayed closest to Mills, watching Mills constantly. It listened carefully as he spoke and often attacked items on his desk with great joy. Enos nicknamed that bird Little Blue. In late September, the three surviving birds joined a flock of mountain bluebirds. They headed for wintering grounds in Texas or Mexico. Soon after, Mills left Tahosa Valley for his winter's work. He returned to his cabin in July 1890. There was a nest of baby bluebirds over the ridgepole. Leaving the door open, Enos sat down at his desk. Suddenly, he heard a flutter of wings and a bird alighted on my shoulder, then on the table. The bird looked intently at Mills. "Are you Little Blue?" he asked it. "Are those your babies in the nest?" The answer to both questions was yes.